song of freedom.
The marvelous and powerful Sweet Honey and the Rock. This is Dennis Bernstein here, where Flashpoints is merging with Robbie Osmond's The Great Divide. Robbie Osmond is out of town. And with his good grace and his commitment to the struggle for free speech radio, he has given our blessing to the special program we're about to bring you about one more executive action on the part of Pacifica that has disrespected the entire listenership, the producers, and everybody who has come to love and depend on this marvelous alternative free speech radio network. There is a note that Robbie asked me to share before we get started. He asked me to tell you that Mimi Farina, the great folk singer, sister of Joan Baez, has had surgery this week. Many of us know Mimi as a musician, as the director of and guiding spirit behind Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses raises spirits by bringing musicians and other performers into prisons and hospitals. If there's anything to the idea that prayers and good wishes of friends and admirers can heal, Mimi deserves to be and surely is surrounded today by the hopeful caring of thousands of those who she has touched. Please, we wish her well. We all do, and we love Mimi Farina. And again, we thank Robbie Osmond for the help that he's given us in putting this show, in having the space for this show. Last Friday night, and in the wee hours of Saturday morning, that I'm talking about this Friday night, late Friday night, and in the wee hours of Saturday morning, 2 days before Christmas, Pacifica Radio's new boss, Bessie Wash, took a chilling executive action at our sister station, WBAI in New York, that included the installation of a new manager, the firing of the program director, Bernard White, and morning show producer, Sharon Harper, and the changing of the locks at the station in the middle of the night. Does that sound familiar? The newly appointed manager, Utrice Lead, came on WBAI air initially at 1:48 a.m. Saturday morning, announced that she was in charge. There would be some house cleaning, but that everything was under control. Saturday morning, Ms. Lead returned to the air and again said that decisions had been made at a higher level, that she was the new interim manager, and again she was in charge, and she was demanding respect. A list was issued by new management of those who could be, who would be allowed into the station, and the enforcement of this new policy was assured and backed up by private security, and apparently some version of New York City cops. There was private security there. Several notable WBAI and Pacifica programmers were kept out of the station, including Mimi Rosenberg and Amy Goodman. New York City cops also on the scene there yesterday to restrain angry WBAI listeners who had gathered for a spirited protest in front of the station. In the following 2 hours, we will hear the voices of our colleagues and friends at WBAI in New York, who we certainly send our solidarity to and stand with. We'll try and bring you as much information as we can about what happened and why and how you can continue to support the battle for unfettered free speech radio. Joining us first on the air are WBAI fired program director Bernard White and Sharon Harper, fired producer of Wake Up Call, WBAI's morning show. And by the way, that morning show was hosted by Bernard White and Amy Goodman for many years and is very, very popular in New York City. I've taken cabs in the morning there, and I've heard it via the radios of cab drivers all over the city. And you can hear that secondary broadcast in many places of that beautiful and great city. Bernard White, I want to welcome you along with Sharan Harper. I want to give you my support and add my concern to the many who are quite troubled about what happened and the way it happened. Welcome to this, let's call it, / special edition of Across the Great Divide and Flashpoints.
Good morning, Dennis, and good morning to the listeners.
It's good to have you, and the circumstances are not pleasant. It's sort of a degree that we've learned here in the Bay Area to put up on our walls, you know, if we happen to have the luck and the support to graduate high school and to go to college, and we put our degree called Fired from Pacifica up on the wall. So welcome and congratulations on your new appointment. We hope it's only short-lived and interim, and that other things can be done. I think it would be good and respectful if we start by just getting a bit of a bio from both of you. Bernard, tell us something about how you came to WBAI and your relationship and your work there.
Well, I came to WBAI about 20 years ago. I had been going around to various radio stations because it had always been a dream of mine to work in radio. I started out wanting to become a DJ, and I realized that after going down to radio stations that DJs didn't get an opportunity to choose their own record, that they wound up having to pick, you know, that the records already were chosen for them. Then I decided that, maybe I'll take a look at the newsroom. And I realized that in the newsrooms that a lot of the truth about what's going on, that they weren't able to really say that they generally got their news from a news source that had already, where there was some agreement about what was going on, but a lot of times it had nothing to do with reality. And being involved in various demonstrations in the 60s and early 70s, I began to see that a lot of times the reports in newsrooms had nothing to do with the reality of what actually happened on the ground. So, and there were very few African-American voices in the media telling the story of what was actually happening on the ground. Excuse me. So I wanted to get in there and begin to try and tell that story. And there was no place around, no other media outlet that you could go to where you could actually tell your story except for WBAI. So that's how I entered BAI. So Maury Marksman was the program director at that time, and I called him up and I told him what I wanted to do in radio. And he told me to call Robert Knight at that time, who was the news director. And I talked to Robert, and they both said, come on down, hurry up and come on down. So I worked in the newsroom for about 2 years. I did a program that ran for about 10 years called Emanations. And then about 10 years ago, Amy Goodman and I hooked up to do the Wake Up Call, our morning drive program. Over that time, we've touched the lives of many people. We've given access to the community, because one of the things that I firmly felt and still do is that the people in the community can best tell their story. So you find those folks and bring them into the studio and let them talk directly to the listeners about what's happening. So we've been doing that over the last 20 years. We reported on some very special events.
Give us an example of one that stands out in mind for you.
Well, one that stands out in mind was a man named Maurice Bickham, who was in a prison down in Louisiana, and he got arrested in 1958. He was arrested because two police officers dressed in Klan outfits came up to him and started shooting at him. It seems that he was a better shot than them. He shot back and killed them. And they put him in jail. And once we heard the story, he was on death row and in Angola prison in Louisiana. And we began to mount a whole lot of pressure, got people to call down, asking that he be released, giving, you know, some of the circumstances around which he was incarcerated. And our voices, the voices of our community, helped to apply enough pressure to have him released. When he went into jail, there were no highways, there were no cell phones, there were no, you know, a lot of the modern, no VCRs, you know, and he came out into a different world. We were able to help to apply pressure to get him to come out. And it wasn't righting the injustice, but it certainly was pointing out that there is real serious problems in the criminal justice system, and here's one victim of it.
Wow. That's the voice of Bernard White on... We're going to have him tell this story. I should let him do it. Let me just say you mentioned Samori Marksman and Robert Knight, just to name two people who brought you into this network. Robert Knight essentially taught me how to write a news story, and Samori Marksman taught me how to think much more clearly and have a larger, more sweeping vision of things. And we know that there are these kind of people like Samori Marksman, Robert Knight, and Bernard White, and we're about to hear from Sharan Harper, have done this, given voice to the voiceless, given a platform for people who have been disenfranchised or simply attacked for their point of view. And obviously this is part of the battle. Sharan Harper, tell us just briefly how you got into this situation at BAI, how you came to work there.
Well, it was a little bit different road that I took. Let me just say I was a listener for a long time before that. I was an off-and-on occasional listener during the 70s and a bit more of a listener during the 80s. But during the Gulf War, I became committed to WBAI and haven't turned my dial since. In 1993, I came to the station as seasonal paid staff to do basically data entry. When a membership drive comes around, you need someone who can, who's a fast typist, who can, you know, put in the members and keep track of them. And I was told about that job by one of my best friends, Errol Maitland, who we had been friends for a number of years.
And we will have him on in about 20, 25 minutes if people want to know more.
Yes. Errol was working with Wake Up Call, and that's how I met Bernard and Amy and many of the other people who were involved in production. And I was attracted. I did some volunteer work during fundraising drives. In 1996, on Martin Luther King's birthday, I came to the station. It was a marvelous day. It was the day that Maurice Bickham had been freed and had come to visit WBAI to thank our listeners for their input in his being released on good time from Angola. And I was really very taken by this, and it was the first time that I got a chance to see radio production, and I got to see Master Control on the inside. And I thought at that time there might be something that I could do to contribute to the organization of a program, and I approached Bernard and told him that I'd like to work with Emanations to try to perhaps, like, organize things better for them on Sunday nights, you know, make things maybe a little easier. So they asked me to do things like write copy and get involved. And slowly I got into the production end of things. And after some months passed, I became an on-air host of Emanations, which was the weekly program that Bernard started. During a time, part of his production staff, Leslie George, was leaving, and I came to the station to volunteer for a work of call and essentially just started doing the job when she left. And when a job was open as a full-time producer, when the job was created, I applied and was hired as the producer of Wake Up Call. I had the privilege of knowing Samori Marksman, who, while I had a commitment, a lifelong commitment to social justice, opened my eyes to a lot of sources and things that I didn't know about, places where I could get information. And I also had the honor of spending almost every workday with him, a part of the day, and learning more about production, learning more about how we can serve our listeners' needs, and learning more and more about radio. Unfortunately, I think my education was cut short by his untimely death, but I still felt that I was a student in a sense of what needs to be learned and constantly learned in order to bring fresh programming to our listeners. And
well, what you're saying is an experience that many of us had. We start as listeners, and we feel that we have something to say, and there's no place to say it.
Yes.
Then you talk about you started in data entry, and actually I guess you got expanded your work in data entry, but it went from into the computer listeners to data entry onto the air.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those stories are relevant. Again, Samori Marksman, somebody who we all had tremendous respect for, who respected us tremendously, unlike these new bosses at Pacifica that really treat us like garbage. And I want to talk about that now. Bernard White, 20 years more service to this network, and I guess you might say that you were fired by a stranger in a minute. Could you explain how you learned that you were fired?
Well, about 7 o'clock in the morning. In fact, I was on the phone with Sharan and another stalwart of WBAI, Alambe Brandt, and we were going over what had the Christmas coup that had just taken place. And somebody was ringing my doorbell. I mean, they're just leaning on my doorbell, ringing it. So I went to the window to find out who it was. So a young man who I didn't know said, "I have a package here for you. You got to sign for it." So I thought it was strange. So I went downstairs, and he gave me an envelope. And I said, "Well, what is this?" He said, "Well, you have to sign for it." So I opened up the envelope, and inside the envelope were two checks and a letter, which stated that you have been fired. You are no longer allowed on the premises of WBAI. If you do, it will be considered trespassing. And of course, if they are going to that, it means that I will be arrested, and that my belongings will be shipped to me. I guess at some date in the future. But
your belongings, as in?
Well, I have. We at WBAI, being a poor station, not having access to a lot of things, I have maybe about $10,000 in records, in vinyl, as well as CDs, as well as books, as well as I wound up leaving my bag in there with my phone book and all my personal papers. And I'm not allowed to go into the station to get any of those things, or else I'm sure that the new station manager would have me arrested.
Well, the notice said that you would be trespassing if you came to the station?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Now, this is a station where producers come in to produce their shows. And they come in, generally they work, and on the weekends a lot of producers, that's when they get an opportunity to come in and produce their programs. They were locked out yesterday. As a matter of fact, Peter Beauchamp, one of the most award-winning producers at WBAI, was told that if he didn't get out of the lobby, he would get arrested. So was Mimi Rosenberg.
Bernard White, did you anticipate being fired? Being fired, not just being fired in the morning, but was there any indication that you would be facing termination for your work, your political work, your reporting work, or your unwillingness to go with a top-down sort of appointment of a new manager?
There was no indication, neither was there a reason given for the termination. Now, you got to remember, Dennis, that after KPFA, it like rippled through the network, that many people did not want to support Pacifica because they believed that they were getting heavy-handed. They believed that they they were going through a transition period. They weren't sure exactly what kind of national board or what kind of entity they were giving their money to. So a lot of people stopped. They didn't stop listening to WBAI as much as they stopped supporting it. They stopped sending in money. So our revenues went down. We were suffering from a $200,000 deficit. We were coming in with unbalanced budgets. In this last fiscal year, or the end of the fiscal year, we had come in with a balanced budget.
At this point, there's a break in the recording due to a technical problem on my end. Bernard went on to say how they had worked to rebuild the community's confidence, how they had eradicated the budget deficit, and ended with a $70,000 surplus at the end of the year. And Bernard went on to say, the WBAI management team had, only some few months earlier, received praise for these efforts from Pacifica Executive Director Bessie Wash. Dennis then turned to Sharan Harper, who told her story of receiving an early morning knock on her door.
And I called the chief steward, R. Paul Martin, and told him I was concerned because there was this strange package being delivered, and that I told him what had happened to Bernard, and I was concerned. So I had kind of anticipated it at that point, and I opened the door, and there was a young man that I did not know who was holding an envelope and said to me, this is for you, and he said, but you have to sign for it. So I opened it, and inside was a letter, and the letter read essentially that I was terminated effective immediately, that my belongings would be sent to me, that I was to receive 2 weeks severance pay, and if I thought I was entitled to more, I should have to explain that to the signer, who was Bessie Wash, that I was considered no longer part of the staff, and that if I should come to the station, it would be considered trespass. So I said, I can't. He said, you have to sign it. And I said, where? He said, you have to sign the letter and give it back to me. I said, I'm not signing this and giving it back to you. I need the letter. And he took the letter from my hand and the two checks, and I told him that I was not going to sign the letter. So he told me I couldn't have it. And I told him, you know, keep it. But he walked away, and shortly, a few hours later, after I had talked with, you know, R. Paul about what had happened, and he sent off a note to other people in our union that this had happened to me. I went to the door later, and they had placed the two checks under the door.
The same thing happened to me, Dennis, because I refused to sign the letter and gave him back the checks.
Yeah.
Even though it was Christmas, I gave back the checks. And I went back upstairs, and he started ringing the doorbell again, so I didn't want to go back down because I was a little angry, and I said, let me just stay up here. But when I went out later on that day to the demonstration down at WBAI, which was held at 12 noon, a lot of, you know, the checks had been stuck back into the mailbox, but not the letter.
Well, now, Sharan, you are in the union. There are steps in terms of discipline. Have there been any steps leading up to your dismissal?
I have never received any disciplinary action, verbal, written, or otherwise, from anyone. And at the point at which we received the termination, the new station manager had only had the job for 12 hours or so. There was nothing in terms of the union steps that could have led to my dismissal.
All right. Well, let me jump in here for a moment and tell people that you're listening to KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley and KFCF in Fresno. This is your listener-supported, non-commercial, unfettered, free speech radio station for Northern and Central California. And we are talking about a situation that has occurred over the last several days. There was, in fact, let's call it a Christmas coup in New York late Friday night and in the wee hours of Saturday morning, 2 days before Christmas. Pacifica boss Bessie Wash was in the station with the new appointed manager, Utrecht Lead. They were changing the locks. Apparently, they were putting together a list of who would be allowed in. and there were some obviously there were some planned firings, and we're talking about, we're talking to people who were fired. That's Bernard White. He is the program director, interim fired, let's call him. And Sharan Harper is a morning show producer there of their show Wake Up Call that was hosted and has been hosted by Bernard White and Amy Goodman. At this rally yesterday, Amy Goodman and others were kept out of the radio station. Bernard, what was the what did you tell listeners? You spoke there at the rally, and what was the mood of the rally?
Well, there was a lot of anger. I think that there was certainly a miscalculation on the part of the individual who is now occupying the position of interim station manager. There was a lot of anger. I think our listeners have been clear on this from the very beginning, that they realized when Pacifica moved to get rid of Valerie Van Isler, that that was something that should not take place. That if we felt that the station manager should be removed, that that should happen locally, and that we would take the necessary actions to do that. So the listeners were quite upset, those that that assembled. And I told them essentially that that it's really up to them now, that we're not on the inside anymore trying to safeguard the station. So they on the outside are going to have to amount the kind of pressure that we can regain this station back. The person who's now the station manager really is a, you know, is a very articulate person and has a popular program that's on WBAI, a very ambitious person who does not really understand radio. And I think that'll become evident as, you know, in the short run. Or the whole philosophy of listener-sponsored radio that was developed by Lou Hill. I think that they don't really understand what that means. And they will find out that our listeners are very bright, that these are the people who generally turn to WBAI because they have a unique sense of what is what justice is all about, and that they're not going to allow this to continue as it is. And I'm sure that you're going to hear a lot from them in the coming weeks.
Well, let me just interrupt here and say that I did speak briefly with Yatrice Lead, who is the interim manager, according to an announcement that's playing quite regularly on BAI airwaves.
Quite regularly.
I would have liked to have her come on and give her perspective, but I must say that it was somewhat of a heated discussion. But I do want to read just a couple of quotes, a bit of what she initially said at 1:48 a.m. on early Saturday morning, a day and a half before Christmas. And maybe you could help us, help our listeners understand, what exactly was the show that she came on to?
Creative Unity.
Creative Unity, yeah.
And what kind of show is that?
It's a satire show. Young people do skits about political events, primarily social events. And they're actors. They're doing radio drama primarily.
Okay, and so it began with a sort of a, you know, sort of a light banter between Ms. Lead and the host there, and the host laughs, and Yatrice comes in and she says, we interrupt this program, we interrupt this program. The male voice, I guess this is a dramatic production, says it's not the Hindenburg or anything like that, laughs. Yatrice Lead goes on to say, and I'm going to ask one of you or both of you to respond to this. She says, she compliments the producers on how good the show sounds, and she says, well, I understand you're getting a couple of calls, and it's appropriate. We should break something on this show. They're going to break something at 1:48 in the morning. Break something. Break this just in. I want to say there has been a change in management, and I'm delighted to say I've been named the interim station manager of WBAI. And I'm hoping that in the coming weeks, as we face a tough hill, I guess, a tough hill to climb, that we will find the energy and the mutual respect and all the good things that we can summon up within ourselves to meet the challenges ahead. And we'll do that. In the meantime, there is no need. There is no coup. There's just me. And we are doing some changes. Everything remains the same. That's an interesting phrase. We are doing some changes. Everything remains the same. All programs will continue as always. And as you've been witnessing, you've been here for some time. I don't think you can describe the atmosphere as being no SWAT team is here and nobody's being patted down and no metal detectors or anything like that. We're just making a change and we'll be okay. Bernard, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I mean, as you pointed out, there's contradictions right there. I mean, there will be no change. Yet the program director is gone. The morning show has been decimated. There's no producer. And all the voices that would be the most adamant against this kind of thing happening have been extricated from the station. And, there are going to be changes. There are going to be many changes that take place. Quite possibly, you know, other firings, too, of anybody who happens to speak up, because now they have someone inside who is a quisling who, you know, has collaborated with them, and, you know, they are calling the shots through her. Which does not bode well for WBAI. They have a different, administration and KPFA has a different view of the world than we do, and they don't see the kinds of things that we do. They're not interested in police brutality. They're not interested in...
There were cops actually in the station keeping you all out, right?
Yeah.
Were there New York City police... there.
Well, I never got upstairs. I think that downstairs there were New York City police, as well as some security guards. So I can't really say who was upstairs because.
But downstairs, you were prevented in front, sort of doing the street business and the lobby business. There were private security and New York City cops.
Right.
Now, at the time Utrice was reading that statement, there were producers downstairs who were being kept out of the station by union management. They were downstairs attempting to come up while she was on the air telling people this. And while she was saying there would be no change, it's not quite true, the checks that I received were dated the 20th. So the decision had been made earlier in the week before the announcement of Utrice's appointment. The decision had been made to terminate us.
Now, there had been a little bit of misreporting coming over KPFA. There's been some good reporting here, but I just want to clarify something. Bernard, there was an announced teach-in planned for Saturday morning on the future of WBAI, the current battles going on around the manager and conflicts with Pacifica. There was, in fact, you were to be there at 8:30 in the morning to lead a multi-hour teaching. Now, I know that there was some discussion on some of the shows about what was going on, but there was no formal teaching that took place Saturday morning, was there?
Oh, no, that was out, because most of the teaching was in my office. And
locked in your office.
Locked in the office. So a lot of the voices that we had scheduled to speak, including the KPFA documentary, another documentary, We Are Pacifica, Dan Coughlin's speech about what happened to him at PNN. The only thing that we were able to smuggle in to one of the producers was Verna Avery Brown's presentation as to why she left PNN News. And we know what happened after she left it.
Sherrianne Harper, do you believe, as a producer responsible for material information for planning shows such as this, do you believe, we can't figure these things out for sure, but is it your belief that the firing, the timing of the firing, for instance, after the rally at board member John Murdoch's offices in New York, and then there's this announced teach-in plus some important other programming about, say, Palestinian. Do you think that this was planned as a sort of a political shutdown of both information about what's going on at BAI and the kinds of information that you typically broadcast there?
I believe this, the firings and the takeover have come from a two-pronged attack. Certainly Pacifica has their agenda, which I think all this has bearing on, you know, the type of programming we do and their desire to stop it. However, there is another set of things going on. There are a group of people who have personal ambitions and personal access to grind and grudges, who I believe, and it's confirmed in the case of a few people, and I guess history will bear us out, who believe that they would do better to cast their lot with Pacifica, and who I would say are responsible for Pacifica's being able to get, you know, its foot in the door at WBAI. I would also add, in terms of, and what little I will say about Ms. Lead, is that on her programming, while the rest of us were talking about how Pacifica's involvement in our day-to-day operation would jeopardize our ability to bring unfettered news and information to our listeners, Ms. Lead was constantly acting as an apologist for Pacifica, stating that there was no problem, Pacifica was not a threat, and that all our problems were internal because of the type of management we had had and the type of people who were there who were unprincipled, as she said, and who did not demand the best at this level. There was no problem from Pacifica, was her constant broadcast.
Well, let me just interrupt. That is troubling. I myself informed her and her audience, for instance, that on June 26, 1999, 12 armed men seized the station. They told the engineer here that they were armed, locked it down, and created a list. Similar to you all have, same group of men went to our transmitter and pushed and beat and strangled some of our listeners out of the way to reprogram our transmitter so that they rendered this building irrelevant. So it would be hard to, and by the way, we were all arrested for trespassing, and thus our names were put in the, if you will, the criminal justice system mm-hmm. by our bosses at Pacifica. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Well, that's what we're being threatened with, and what is even more troubling is that Eutrice Lead was a shop steward who sat on the shop committee along with me, so she does know about the illegality of my firing and how it goes against the contract, and this will go on record as her first action as the leader as being an anti-labor move.
Well, Bernard White, give us a sense of what's going on for you now. Will you be making yourself available to listeners and activists who want to fight this battle? Where do you see this going now?
Well, you know, I have in the past had several discussions with Eutrice Lead about what would happen if anyone were, if we did not maintain our autonomy here at WBAI, that we would have made this radio station very vulnerable to being taken over and changed from people who don't have the best interests of our community at heart. And now I was able trying to hold that back on the inside, and now I'm no longer on the inside. So I think as a person on the outside, someone who recognizes the importance of this radio station, that I plan to make myself available if our community responds. I got a feeling that, you know, my phone is not stopped yet, and I don't think that that was anticipated by those who were involved in the coup. Eutrice Lead took the lead, so to speak. But there are several other people, several other folks, a little cabal of folks who worked right alongside of her to make this happen. I think that that whole cabal ought to be exposed, that people ought to know who's responsible for trying to destroy WBAI, and we're having a meeting here on Wednesday. I expect that meeting will be jam-packed. Folks from all over, from Jersey, you know, the surrounding counties will be there because people are outraged. They see very clearly what this is about. So I will be trying to attend as many of those meetings as possible to sit down and talk to people about what it is we're about to lose.
All right. Well, I do want to again thank both of you for the great work and the great time you've spent over so many years giving this network and the people of New York your good services and your commitment to alternative information. And we will, I assure you, and our listeners will make sure that we do keep an eye on this and offer our solidarity in this battle against what I still consider at the higher level a corporate raid on free speech radio.
Okay, may I give a couple of websites?
Please, and please do.
There are two websites. One of them is www.glib.com. That's www.glib.com. And www.savepacifica.net. www.savepacifica.net. There are a couple of hotlines. The 800 number is 1-800-825-0055. Once again, 800-825-0055. Another, if anyone's picking this up in New York, 718-707-7189. Once again, 718-707-7189.
Okay, those two numbers, the hotline is 1-800-825-0055.
Yes.
And then the New York number, 718-707-7189. The websites, www.glib.com, and people know the Save Pacifica.
Right.
And is that, the Save Pacifica is .net?
.net, yes.
Okay, savepacifica.net. Again, my colleagues, my good friends, my teachers, I thank you for your time and the good information.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Janet.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, and you are listening to a special here on KPFA Free Speech Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. With the good wishes of Robbie Osman, we have come in here to do a special on, I guess we can call it a Christmas coup in New York at WBAI. We're now joined by a longtime employee of WBAI and somebody who has worked with Democracy Now! Almost since its inception, Errol Maitland. Errol, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Well, Dennis, let me turn my internet down. Thank you very much.
All right.
For inviting me back on Flashpoint.
It's a pleasure to have you, and I, as I did with Bernard and with Sharan, I want people to have a sense of the kind of work that you've done in the past and what your affinity is, why you have chosen to do your work with WBAI and as a technical producer on Democracy Now!
Well, I primarily came to WBAI, boy, I'm trying to remember now, back in 1992, after the student takeover at the City University System in New York. Students were protesting the horrendous cutback and rise in tuition by a liberal governor, Mario Cuomo. And students took over the university for 2 weeks. And during that period of time, the corporate media at first were very sympathetic to the voice of students. But as the struggle continued, the media, the New York Times, Daily News, the mainstream press, the television stations, began turned sour on the issues that the students were protesting, the community was protesting. And the only place that was consistently covering the story and putting a human face on it was WBAI in New York. At that point, I felt it was time to join the radio station and to do whatever I could to support that effort. I was doing a public access television program. I was doing community media. And I went in as a volunteer at WBAI. I was basically drafted in there by people who were doing work in the Harlem community to on a level of international issues, issues that were of concern to people of African heritage and African descent, which is so absent from the mainstream, from the mainstream press, from the mainstream media. And I went down. I put my skills to work. I volunteered answering the telephone. Then I was invited in by Bernard White to come in and to pitch on the air to raise funds for WBAI. And from there, I volunteered and worked on Emanation and on Wake Up Call, which is a program I had listened to and worked and contributed to as a listener and a volunteer. You know, whenever anything happened in the community, BAI was always there, and it was an independent voice. It was the only place where we could have access to the media. And so I've done stuff on BAI over the years. I've been to the station as a guest, but then I came on as a producer. And someone in the struggle, sometimes you're drafted to go in and lend some expertise. And I went in there with that spirit to do what I could for as long as I could to be a drum, to be a sounding board, an early warning system for the community. I worked at WBAI for many years as an unpaid staff person. I was finally hired as a part-time person on Wake Up Call when Democracy Now! Came to New York, or even when it was in Washington and segments had to be originated from New York. I was the engineer on that program, so I lent my voice to that program. Maury Marksman asked me to and work on that program and to continue my effort to work on the program because it was important for people of color to have an input on a national program, a program that had international implications. And I have stayed with that program as well as BAI. I am out of the fray and out of the current fight because as I'm speaking to you, I'm lying on my back, suffering from a disability created by the New York City Police Department.
The same police department, the ones that are the same department that had beaten you and then handcuffed you to your own bed for reporting the truth, as we are known to do on Pacifica, was, I guess, in the lobby and downstairs preventing you all from going up to your own station. What was your response to that?
Well, you know, right now I have a sense of aversion from the New York City Police Department. And I did go to the rally yesterday, and I did speak at that rally. And I did see the police department behaving in the same manner that they behaved on March 25th of this year when they busted up the funeral of Patrick Doris Mine, a young African-American of Asian descent who was gunned down in cold blood by the New York City Police Department. I saw the same behavior of them trying to corral people, trying to bully and push people out. As a matter of fact, we do have it on tape, and at some time that tape may become available with people, lawyers, going toe-to-toe with the police department, the police pushing people around at this demonstration. So New York City Police Department hasn't changed, and these are the goons that have been calling under the leadership of Mayor Rudolph Giuliani to, I guess at this point, enforce an illegal lockout of union workers at WBAI in New York.
Wow. Well, Errol, we want to keep speaking with you, but we just have a we have about 30 seconds of an interview that one of our producers here at KPFA did with Amy Goodman. She is the host of Democracy Now! You've worked with Amy, and you're just getting back up to speed in your work at BAI. This is just 30 seconds. We want people to hear from Amy what happened to her when she tried to enter the building yesterday. So this is Amy's response.
Last night, as the locks were being changed on the doors, I called into the station. I spoke with the operations director, Sydney Smith. I asked him if I could come into the station then. Utrecht Lead, the new Pacifica-appointed general manager, was standing next to him. Sydney asked her if I could come in, and she said no. I saw her today. There was a protest of more than 100 people outside the station that was just ad hoc pulled together. I wanted to go up. She wouldn't let me go into the station. It's an illegal lockout of union workers, both UE, United Electrical, and I'm AFTRA. We were not able to go in. When we attempted to go in as workers, as producers, the security prevented us from going up, and then they called in police, and they pushed us out of the building. And so we were outside as Bessie Wash, Utrecht Lead, were upstairs.
That was Amy Goodman. Errol Maitland, have you spoken with Amy?
Yes, I spoke to Amy this morning. She is unsure of what will happen the next time we report for work. I intend to report for work sometime around 6 o'clock or thereafter on Tuesday. Amy comes in at 7 in the morning. I don't know what to expect at that time. I have not been contacted by or informed by anyone in the administration as to what the new policies of the stations will be, whether or not there will be a wake-up call or a morning program. But I do believe that it's essential that we do not willingly surrender the airwave to these individuals. We have a responsibility to a community and people who have served us to put on programs. We have a contract that was signed by Utrecht Lead just this last week that in our capacity as a member of labor to uphold, and we also have this contract with our listeners to provide a program, and if you're going to make some changes, you have to give due notice. And so, you know, I intend to show up at work if my health permits, and we will see what happens at that point. I want to tell you that I do not trust Pacifica's management, and I cannot, in good conscience, trust anyone who would come in under that system to be in any way, shape, or form have the interest of the listeners or the community at heart. So I am very, very skeptical of the pledges and promises that have been made. I've listened to the radio, and I don't know if people are speaking freely their minds or they're acting in a cautious manner. But I want it to be known that I am totally and completely not in sympathy with the people who have taken control of the station at this time. I, over the years, have had my differences with Valerie Van Isler, and I will continue to express those differences, but any differences that I have with her are insignificant compared to the differences that I have with Pacifica and Pacifica management. I believe that their philosophy are totally antithetical to the mission of Pacifica, and that they're out to destroy it. They're not out to reform it or improve it. And in good conscience, we need to resist and we need to fight against those people. And I have firsthand witnessed their actions and their behaviors in the past, and I have seen nothing to indicate otherwise. And the people that they've put in there, if they can put the people that went through the process in a proper fashion in position and have this coup, then I believe these individuals there, if they do anything that is positive, anything that is in favor of free speech, will be removed. So I don't see them as being anything but pawns in a very, very dangerous game. And they're collaborating with people who I feel are enemies, anything democratic or anything fair or just at this time in the society.
We're speaking with Errol Maitland. He has been on sick leave. He works as the technical producer of Democracy Now, or at least he did until Friday, despite the fact that he was on leave. Errol Maitland has been a producer, paid and volunteer for the morning show. on WBAI in New York. Errol, you will have heard him if you listen to our Flashpoint show. Errol did courageous reporting at the Patrick Dorisman funeral in Brooklyn, where he was trying to report on the massive and really terrible police brutality that was being exhibited against those mourners and against people who have been protesting the expanded police brutality regime of the current mayor there, Rudolph Giuliani. I want to tell people you're listening to KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley and KFCF in Fresno. This is a special two-hour show devoted to the middle-of-the-night firings, lock changings at WBAI, where the Pacifica bosses appear to be continuing the same hard-line treatment of those who don't fall into line. I have to assume that our bosses at Pacifica, who were willing to stop me, shut me down, arrest me for trespassing, will in fact be coming back my way and KPFA's way. We obviously need to be organized, ready for that. We do have a battle over the control of finances, and there are many levels of action that are being taken so that we can secure this this great university without walls, this real, it's what's left in terms of a non-corporate, non-commercial driven radio network, free speech alternative. We're a rare breed, and we've been under attack, and obviously that attack came back big time with this changing of the guard, this 1:48 a.m. announcement by the new managers that she was in charge. Errol Maitland, I want people to also remember who you are. I want people to remember who you are, and we're going to take a short news break, and I hope that you can stay with us, because I want to talk a little bit about your work, and then in a little bit later on in this broadcast, we'll be speaking with Mr. Al Grandpa Lewis, who has some stunning words that he wants to share. Former, I believe he was Grandpa on the Munsters, is that right? In any event, we will take this break and we'll be right back.